Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. I'm John Batchelor. To Panama, the Darien Gap, the route north through the Darien Gap to the United States border that is much in turmoil. The presidential contest in Panama. Heretofore, the professor has guided me to understand that the leading candidate at one time, who is due to be in jail when and if he comes out in the Nicaragua embassy, the leading candidate has been disenfranchised by default. However, there is a new leading candidate, and that is equally challenging for a part of the Central America that was at one time regarded as highly stable, with revenues from the canal, with copper mining, with revenue from the banking in Panama City, and now, Professor, I read from a recent report that Jose Raul Mulino is a Panamanian presidential frontrunner. And his most recent remarks, according to this report, he has pledged to close down the Darien Gap, known for criminal activity. Mulino, Panama's former security minister, has expressed concerns about migration pressures faced by Panama. Now, the numbers are overwhelming. People coming from all over the world, often to Quito, but not necessarily, making their way to Colombia, crossing into Panama, and then traversing the gap, 60 miles, I'm told, of triple canopy jungle that is now well-worn because the smugglers took over. It's big business. Panama has a first-rate police force, Senafron, I'm told, by people who have been there and dealt with them. There are two large camps, maybe three large camps now, receiving. NGOs are everywhere handling refugees. Chinese nationals coming through, they don't have the language. Young men, very vigorous, big shoulders. However, they use the translator in the iPhone. It's all quite charming. It's 21st century migration. To make their way to San Vicente, busing north to Costa Rica, through Costa Rica all the way to the Mexico border. Mexico processes them, gives them a permission to travel to Mexico, and then welcome to the USA. Now we have a candidate who says he's going to close it down. What is the politics of Panama that closing down the gap is necessary?
Well, John, certainly it's important to consider the broader context. There's a lot of frustration in Panama, which has traditionally been not only very pro-U.S., but also really kind of one of the fountains of prosperity in the region, in part because of the Panama Canal, part because of the role of the country as a hub for international finance and in logistics. But what you've seen is the accumulation of different factors which really have frustrated Panamanians. One, as you alluded to, is this enormous migration that has been coming from Colombia through the jungle region in the south of Panama, the Darien Gap. You have Venezuelans and Ecuadorians and Chinese, as you alluded to, and Cubans and Haitians all transiting the country. But on top of that, you've had a drought that has forced the lowering of produced the lowering of the water levels in Lake Gaitun and really has forced the canal itself to reduce operations, which has been a big financial hit. On top of that, you've had the closure basically illegal disputes of a copper mine, First Quantum, that accounted for 5% of the nation's GDP. And on top of that, ever since COVID-19, you've had problems with a number of some of the infrastructure projects going forward slowly, a perception of corruption and frustration with the current government. And so Panamanians have been getting more frustrated, and the expression of that frustration before was that a previous president that the Panamanians remember when times were good, Ricardo Martinelli, had been the overwhelming frontrunner with more than 40% of the vote. The problem was that Martinelli has a lot of corruption charges associated with him. And recently, when the Panamanian courts declared that his candidacy was going to be invalidated, and basically he was, after losing his appeal, would go to jail, he not only took refuge in the Nicaraguan embassy and is still there now. But additionally, the fact that he legally could not run because of the loss of his appeal in this criminal case meant that it defaulted to basically his previous vice presidential candidate, who was Aurel Molina, who, while maybe not a Martinelli, is arguably as kind of gruff and as populist as Martinelli is. And so really, the fact that Jose Aurel Molina in a very broad field has 29% of the vote, the next three candidates have about 10 to 14% each. And then behind that, you've got other candidates still. But I think it really shows the frustration of Panamanians. And again, as you pointed out, at the heart, one of those many issues is certainly the Darien Gap. And as with, the U.S. border, discussions and the way that this has become a key part of the November presidential elections in the United States, this question of Panama, so to speak, controlling its border and a populist center-right candidate really trying to rally Panamanians around the importance of closing it has become one of those key election issues in what is likely to be one of the more colorful and ugly elections that Panama has had in quite some time.
Panama is an open problem. Brazil is not. However, Brazil continues to be my favorite situation comedy, Professor, because what we have is a really vibrant population, mixed, I understand, from all continents, everyone happy all the time, except when it comes to politics. When it comes to politics, there's a division that looks to be profound, called right and left, but I've come to understand it's often associated with personality cults. Lula da Silva, the three-time elected president, has a personality cult, and he's colorful, and he presents himself granddad of the left of center. Mr. Bolsonaro, the former president, has a personality cult, and he's good at it. I'm not quite sure how to describe him other than the fact he's a populist who behaves pretty much like a TV star or a movie star. And he had a rally in Rio the other day, a big crowd, a very big crowd, very excited. And I'm told that Lula da Silva cannot attract a similar excited crowd, no violence. And now we have an announcement from one of the members of the Supreme Court, De Moraes, we've talked about him before, saying that in some fashion there's no record or evidence that Mr. Bolsonaro sought asylum in a Hungarian embassy. When you first come across this headline, you go, what? What does this have to do with reality? But it turns out that Bolsonaro has been the receiving end of a series of complaints. How do you say this? Accusations, allegations, and all the way from faking a vaccine certificate to hiding in the Hungarian embassy to staging a coup. And I think money laundering has been thrown in. There might be some more. So is this politics in Brazil? Is this new politics in Brazil? How to regard this? Because at no point are they talking about substantive policy. They're talking about personality cults being dinged by the other side.
Well, John, there are eerie parallels between Brazil and the political polarization in the United States for those all too familiar with this issue as we approach our own November elections. But Brazil, again, half of the mass of South America with a population of over 200 million and about half of its economy, is, as you pointed out, traditionally been politically a fairly open country with the acceptance of multiple cultures and multiple points of view. But the polarization is increased in recent years, especially between left and right. And part of that polarization, I think, came out through those in the agricultural, those kind of in the traditional kind of heartland of Brazil, feeling themselves kind of disenfranchised by the politically incorrect left, best represented by the Workers' Party with Lula da Silva, propelled Jair Bolsonaro to the presidency. But now when Bolsonaro had lost, there was something, again, eerily parallel to what happened in the U.S. In that that, although with the difference that once Bolsonaro had actually succeeded, there were major protests on January 8th, some suggesting that Bolsonaro may have been talking with his military to not accept the results of those and maybe have the military step in. But the bottom line is that now that the Lula government did take power without difficulty and is proceeding forward, there's a whole series of cases that have proceeded forward. Everything from the question, again, not unlike the United States, of whether Bolsonaro, through the military or others, there's been the leaking of a memo that supposedly was evidence that Bolsonaro was maybe conspiring with his generals. But also other things, as you pointed out, the case of whether he misrepresented his vaccine records. And so there's just a slew of legal cases. And he actually, under Brazilian law, has been politically inhabilitated. So he actually cannot run. His own political career is now over, a little bit different than the situation in the United States. But Bolsonaro, as a political figure still, trying to keep his movement alive, did hold a rally. And, you know, again, 100,000 people in Rio de Janeiro. It's interesting, of course, aging U.S. pop star Madonna is actually due to sing in Rio. It'll be interesting to see whether Madonna can get a bigger crowd than Bolsonaro got in Rio de Janeiro. The issue with respect to Hungary. Bolsonaro being seen as a rightist and a populist. Of course, Hungary, Viktor Orban being seen as a rightist and a populist, a certain amount of sympathy between the two. And so Bolsonaro had hung out for 2 days in the embassy. So there's some speculation that Bolsonaro, fearing that all the legal cases were rigged against him, and this Supreme Court Justice Alejandro de Moraes, who has been really one of the proponents taking a lot of these cases forward, there was some suspicion that Bolsonaro was ready to throw in the towel and look for political asylum with a friend of his. Moraes now says, okay, can't show any evidence that was what he was actually doing, hanging out in the embassy for 2 days. But it really kind of goes to the broader issue of what has always been a very tolerant country, a very politically diverse country, the degree to which it's become polarized and the degree to which all of these legal cases for a certain group of people that don't identify with Lula, you see this, not unlike the United States, as the weaponization of the legal system, which causes one to actually lose faith in the legal system. And when that happens in a place like Brazil, other very bad things can happen with respect to the future of democracy.
Is this back and forth? You know, you did this, you did these allegations that don't seem to have a day two. Is that normal politics in Brazil, or are they inventing something for the first time?
Well, in the past 2 to 3 years, you can say that this has become the new normal. I mean, there's always been, beyond what is in the United States, a sense of corruption within the Brazilian judiciary, although Brazil's judiciary arguably functions and has far more confidence than many other judiciaries in places like Central America. However, the quantity of different cases and in the investigation of the cases, it's not normal, and especially targeting one person who happened to be the previous president of Brazil. That happens in other Latin American countries. Again, we just previously mentioned Ricardo Martinelli having to take refuge in the Nicaraguan embassy in Panama. But for Brazil, This type of thing is a little bit not normal. And so, again, it reflects just the tension that's going on and the pressure on people's faith in Brazilian institutions that implies.
Two major elections, one behind us, one in front of us, Argentina and Mexico. Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. We're headed to Argentina. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.